northwest wind at 5 to 10. Clear skies tonight, a low of 1 below. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Saturday's high 22. More sunshine for Sunday with a high of 27. Looking ahead, dry on Monday, a slight chance of some rain or snow on Tuesday, snow possible on Wednesday, warming up to around 40 on Tuesday before the temperature peels back again. Right now we have a temperature reading of 10, a wind chill reading in Kenosha of 3 below. I'm David Cole, WGTD News.
Support for WGTD comes from Premier Barbers and Stylists, 8064 North 76th Street in Milwaukee, reminding you that many traffic accidents are the result of drivers on their cell phones. Whether you're talking or texting, cell phone usage while driving has become a serious problem. Premier Barbers and Stylists asks you to do your part to keep the streets safe. Premier Barbers and Stylists, 414-355-4247.
I'm Gregory Berg. We are certainly pleased to have a very special guest in the studios with us today for this last morning show of the week, namely Trevor Young. And I'm sure many of you who live in Racine or close thereby know the name Trevor Young, because he has been quite a vibrant presence on the scene of his community for a number of years. As a matter of fact, he was elected to Racine's Common Council in 2019 when he was just 23 years old. And that was kind of unheard of, especially for that particular district, something like 150 years since someone so young had been elected to the Common Council. But late last summer, Trevor's sort of path of public service took a different turn when he was appointed transit manager for the city of Racine. And public transportation is an issue that Trevor has cared deeply about for a long time. And so it's a really ideal fit. And Trevor's already hard at work on a number of different initiatives, a couple of which we are going to be talking about today. And we're going to be talking about the issue of public transportation even beyond the scope of the city of Racine itself, its city limits. It really does make sense when we're talking about transportation to think more regionally. And that brings up a lot of intriguing questions as well. Speaking of intriguing, Trevor Young's personal story, the history of where he came from, is a really uncommon story and has played out in a lot of interesting ways. And so we're going to be giving him some time to talk about that as well. So without further ado, Trevor Young, we welcome you to the morning show.
Greg, thank you so much. What an honor to be here, and what an introduction. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you better live up to it. So,
yeah.
first of all, in a nutshell, tell us what the general responsibilities of Racine's transit manager are. What basically is on your desk?
What's on the desk? Well, a lot of paperwork is on the desk, but The work really involves working directly with the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, the Department of Transportation for the state of Wisconsin, working with our municipal partners who we serve with transit service, with the school district to make sure that students can get to class, and operating the $10 million budget that is the Ride Racine budget to make sure that we are got our operators, making sure the buses are running on time. So my role is in the governance space. So we've got a general manager who does an excellent job in making sure that those buses are running. And I make sure that the money is coming in to ensure that we have the operations for the system.
So you're not the one opening up the hood and checking the spark plugs then?
That's right. Although I love learning about that stuff. I've been at the garage more than I thought I would be, which is wonderful.
I know that you served, in fact, you might have even been chair of the Common Council's Committee on Transit. So clearly this is something that was of great interest to you even before this sort of shift into this particular position. Can you trace your interest to anything in particular? Why has this been such an important issue for you, just philosophically or for any other reason?
Greg, I think that that's an excellent question because it really comes back to why I joined public service. I think Racine's future relies on a connected regional community. Here we are between Milwaukee and Chicago with a historic downtown, award-winning architecture, one of the top 10 freshwater beaches in the country, a diverse population. We're large enough where you can discover new things, small enough where you know your neighbor. Yet we face some serious challenges around equity, around growth, around development. And so there's always been the question, what are the things that are going to make Racine the best that it can be? You know, enter a renaissance, or as I like to say, a Racinaissance. and I think transportation plays a large role in that. And you mentioned in the introduction the importance of regionalism. And I think being the largest community furthest away from an interstate highway in the Midwest, there are some barriers that exist being connected to the region. Even though we're in the heart of the Milwaukee-Chicago metro, we're not connected. And so how can we be connected and how can we grow as a community?
I think somewhere I saw a quote where you refer to Racine as something of an island. I mean, and it's and in a sense, you're trying to create more bridges to the island coming out and going in.
Right. And I wasn't quoting the Dolly Parton song, Islands in the Stream. So
So really, your passion for transportation or for public transit has a lot to do just with the development of Racine in general, and you see this as one of the chief vehicles or tools for doing that.
I owe my whole life to Racine. You know, I was born halfway across the world and was in an orphanage until I was 2 years old. And my dad, who's a fourth-generation Racinian, traveled halfway across the world to save a child from a Russian orphanage. And so growing up in Racine, being a product of the public schools, knowing my neighbors, you know, really being raised by the village that is our community, I grew up with this real sense of gratitude for my hometown. And so to be in a position where I can assess what are the real needs of Racine for it to be as successful as possible and contribute, that's the motivation.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on the morning show with Trevor Young, who late last summer was appointed to be the transit manager for the city of Racine. Before that, he had served ably on the Racine Common Council representing the 9th district. And for a time, there was also working at Carthage College in the Aspire Center. But anyway, we are spending most of our time today talking about his work as transit manager. Trevor, since you brought it up, let's circle back to the personal and let's dig a little deeper into this really intriguing story of where you were born and how your father ultimately found you and brought you back to his hometown of Racine. So you were born in Russia.
That's right.
And what do you know about your first couple years of life? Probably not a whole lot.
Yeah, well, from, you know, the documentation that we have and the pictures that have been taken, you know, my understanding of being in a Russian orphanage in Krasnodar, which is right in the Black Sea across from Crimea. So what's been in the news as of late. The conditions are what you would probably imagine a Russian orphanage to be. So Gratitude is the key word that I express when talking about how I was able to go from that environment to Racine, Wisconsin, which is one of the most American of American cities.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a risk. You know, here's my father, who in the 1990s was a single dad who, you know, was able to, you know, navigate the social situations and be encouraged by family and friends to start a family. And as somebody who is a member of the LGBT community at that time, to start a family was something that, you know, was different than what we would think of today.
And not quite so often done.
Correct.
And not so often talked about. What does your dad tell you about what kind of fostered his interest in doing this? And also, what has he told you about sort of the various pathways he could have pursued, and what led him to head off to faraway Russia, of all places?
That's a great question. I think if you ask any father what motivated you to do that, they would probably say wanting that love in their life and wanting that family. And the answer is the same with my dad. And fortunately, he wasn't alone in raising me. My grandma was a big part of that. The rest of my extended family took a major role in my upbringing. But even beyond the young family, it was my teachers in Racine Unified School District. It was my neighbors on Carlisle Avenue on the north side of Racine who contributed to the almost all-American childhood I had in like Little League Baseball. And so you would think that this unique story would make for some different type of childhood and upbringing. But, you know, I was in Little League Baseball, did ceramics at Wisdom Art Museum, did theater at the Racine Theater Guild. And so to have those opportunities and then to reflect on where I could have been, especially in the turbulent times that Eastern Europe is facing right now.
Yeah.
How grateful.
Wow. For sure. Growing up in Racine, what do you remember about being adopted and having a single parent and one in the LGBT community on top of it? Do you remember that being sort of greeted strangely or with bewilderment by your friends and peers, or not particularly? I mean, did they see it as normal as you did?
Yes. That's the beautiful thing about Racine. You know, we speak over 40 languages in our public schools. So that's an indicator that people are coming from everywhere
right.
and have all different walks of life. And so when you're in an environment of that diversity, that is not unusual when somebody else is different than you. And that really informed my perspective on how to treat people with dignity and respect, no matter, you know, where they come from or who they are.
So you are a product of the Racine Unified School District. Where exactly did you go to school, and what are some of your most vivid memories?
I went to Wadowitz Elementary School. A Waddy Bear was the mascot. Then Gilmore Middle School, which is the Griffins. And then Case High School as an Eagle. And I think some of the biggest memories that I had were just connecting with faculty and staff in the schools, being supportive of my interests as a young person. You know, I've been interested in public service and politics since I was a child. My grandma, when I was, I think, about 12 years old, or no, probably about 8 years old, got me a Board of the Presidents. And so it's, you know, obviously before the smartphone, and you'd click on, you know, George Washington, and it would say some fun facts about him. And that was the impetus to a lot of this interest, which grew into, you know, being a student of history and being interested in government and eventually pursuing that path as a way to make a difference. So and I've noticed that immediately from my teachers, who fueled that interest in having those conversations and providing, you know, materials to fuel an intellectual curiosity that a child had, which I think is wonderful.
Fantastic. So when you went off to college, to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, it was not, however, to be a history major or a political science major, but rather urban studies. So tell us what drew you to that. I mean, we can see now in retrospect what a perfect choice that was, but at the time, what was drawing you in that direction?
It all goes back to Racine. You know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to study in university, I thought, what is going to equip me with the skills that are going to be able to make the biggest difference in my hometown? And so looking at all of the programs throughout the UW system, I saw the Urban Studies program as something that was unique in that it's an interdisciplinary program that looks at public administration, sociology, economics, political science, urban planning, and puts those together in a way that gives you a holistic understanding of how governance happens, how cities succeed, how cities deal with challenges. And I thought that that was just, you know, the dream academic pursuit.
How did it play out? I mean, did it end up being all that you wanted?
Oh, my gosh. It was wonderful. Yes. I was able to do my capstone project on the political realities of commuter rail in the state of Wisconsin. And so here we are with the infrastructure bill passing and now in my professional role talking about what type of major investments can we bring to southeastern Wisconsin. And so to be able to, in university, have the opportunity to explore those things and understand what, you know, economic and political barriers existed, now to be able to be in this role and reflect on what I was able to research in college, it's in retrospect, as you said, is great.
Amazing. So let's talk about your run for the Racine Common Council in 2019. I mean, in some ways, that shouldn't have been a surprise at all. I mean, given all that you've been talking about in terms of what you have been so passionate about. However, you were a youngster at the time that you did it. I mean, relatively speaking anyway. Did you undertake that with any particular trepidation? Or did that just feel like the most natural thing in the world to do as a 22 or 23-year-old?
Well, that's interesting. You know, knocking on a stranger's door and asking them, for something as sacred as their vote is a serious endeavor to take on. But I found it to be the most rewarding experience. Getting to know people in a real way and talking to neighbors about the serious challenges that exist in their neighborhood or what they hope to see for the future of Racine, there was something special in that experience. And so I didn't really view it as a, the yard sign being put in the lawn as the victory. I viewed it as really being able to get to know people who have an investment in the future of their community and wanting to share that with somebody who shared a passion for what they hope to see for the future. And so when I was, you know, knocking on doors, mainly trying not to slip on ice because it's a sprint, you know, an election in, you know, January into April, you know, I found it to be an amazing experience and education in what Racine is all about. And the 9th District, they recently redrew the map based on the census. But when I served on the Common Council, the 9th District really was a microcosm of Racine. You know, from the far south side, you had Knapp Elementary School and, you know, a working class neighborhood that was diverse. And then you go up to West Racine where Wilson's Coffee Shop is and that commercial district that has its own needs and has its own attributes. And then you go up to the neighborhoods just north of the hospital and south of Meadowbrook Country Club, which have a different set of needs and requests of their representative on the Common Council. So to be able to represent that district in particular, I always like to say I was the alderman for the Kringle Capital of the Kringle Capital because we had Benson's Bakery, Larson's, you know, everything that ends with Sun is in that area. So,
what did it feel like to sit on the Common Council as someone so young? I mean, nobody as young as you had been elected to the Common Council since the 1860s. I mean, did it feel strange or did it feel strangely right for you to be there?
Well, you know, people, whenever they would say, aren't you a little too young? I would say, I'm not too young. I'm Trevor Young, which usually was welcomed by a groan or something. But no, the responsibilities definitely of that role were immediate. There were some very difficult decisions that needed to be taken for the fiscal health of the city of Racine in the long term that did not make any friends. You know, making tough decisions in government, you're eventually going to meet folks with different priorities and different understandings of what needs to happen on the floor of the council. And so I learned rather quickly that local government isn't a popularity contest. It's a responsibility to make the right decision in the long term for your community. And so I think that that was a learning experience. And for, I'm sure, a lot of young people who see public service as a way to connect with others, it's also a way to, you know, find your moral compass and to you know, realize that you're not going to make everybody happy.
Right. Well, yeah, and figuring out what you think matters most and what you're willing to stand behind, even if it's painful or difficult.
Exactly. And the only commitment that you can make is to be available and to listen and to make sure that everybody's voice feels heard when you're in a role like that, because that's your job. Your job isn't necessarily to sit on the floor of the council and deliver a barn-burning address around an issue. Your job is to take the wisdom of the people who want to provide it to you and then make the best decision.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Racine's Trevor Young, who now serves the city of Racine as its transit manager. Before, he was a member of the Common Council representing the 9th District and was for a time chair of the Common Council's Transit Committee. So as we've already touched on, issues revolving around public transit have been important to you for a long time. Before we deal with a couple of specific things, I want you to say a word about COVID and the fact that your time serving on the Common Council, in a sense, was interrupted or coincided with the onset of the pandemic. And, of course, that involved some really difficult decisions in terms of how the city of Racine was going to confront such a challenge. What role did the Common Council play in some of those decisions? I mean, were those decisions made by the Common Council or more by the mayor? And what do you remember about the conversations around some of those really vexing and challenging questions?
Vexing is the word. One of the moments that stands out to me is actually when I was, you know, working at Carthage College and, you know, this news of this strange illness was floating around on the airwaves. And, you know, we thought, oh, well, this is interesting. I wonder what's happening here. And when we were sent home after more information came out about what we know now to be the pandemic, we thought, and I'm sure, Greg, you're in the same boat, like, okay, well, be at home for a couple weeks and then life will go back to normal and we'll remember this as kind of an odd moment. And we know that that is not what happened. And so being on the Common Council, our role as advocates for the community's quality of life and well-being was to reflect on the data, to use the expertise of our public health department and make the best decision in the long term for folks in the city of Racine. There were difficult decisions that had to be made regarding limits and businesses and mask mandates, et cetera. But it was always informed by the science, always informed by the data. And I'm really proud, actually, of both the health department, the Common Council, and the administration, and the community for realizing that this was that sacrifice to get through a challenge was something that had to happen. And I think because of it, we're in a better spot than a lot of other places.
Yeah, well put. So what was your role as chair of the Transit Committee? And what kind of education was that for you as a young person in terms of understanding an issue that you already cared about? But I suspect being in a position like that gave you a whole lot of sort of additional or new insights.
That's so true. The Transit Commission's role is as the governing body of the transit system in the city of Racine. And there are members of the Village of Mount Pleasant who contribute to the system in a regional capacity who have positions on the Transit Commission. And this body reviews operating metrics. It reviews routes. It reviews policy decisions related to the direction of the transit system, and it sets goals. And one of the goals that the Transit Commission set revolved around sustainability and environmental stewardship. And as the Common Council signed on to the Paris Climate Accord and committed itself to being carbon neutral as a community, the Transit Commission took that as an opportunity to modernize our fleet. And as a result, staff at the time, Mike Meyerly, who was my predecessor, and Kara Pratt, who is the sustainability coordinator for the city of Racine at the time, led the charge with federal and state agencies to bring resources back to the city of Racine to electrify our fleet. And because of that, we were awarded Volkswagen settlement money and Lono grant money from the federal government, and were able to replace 25% of our entire fleet of diesel trucks that were from the early 2000s to now fully electric Proterra buses that will be able to save 8 tanker trucks a year of diesel. Wow. And be able to provide a modernized service and in a sustainable way that saves taxpayer dollars.
Wow. So this was paid for at least largely through grants?
All through grants.
Wow.
So the charging infrastructure, the buses themselves, the leased batteries, this was not at the expense of local taxpayers. This was through city staff and policymakers making a real commitment to sustainability and pursuing it in a successful manner that was able to update our fleet and be responsible with the property taxpayers' dollars.
Wow. You were telling me that although these kind of efforts are happening all over the place, Racine is in some respects really leading the way. Tell us more.
Yeah. So the city of Racine has 9 electric buses. So 25% of our entire fleet will be electric. And actually, when we talk about service on the roads, these buses are going to be running in peak hours. And so during peak hours, we have about 22 buses on the road. And so that will be a third of the buses on the road will be all electric. And there is not another community in the state of Wisconsin that can say that. There was a time when Chicago had less buses coming in than the city of Racine. It was a very short window, but we were pretty proud of that. We're beating out other communities across the state in terms of being all electric is something to be proud of in the city of Racine. And it's going to be an education for other communities to, see how we did here. I'm excited to work with communities all across the state and their electrification efforts. Hmm.
So you have these buses already?
They are in the garage. We have our 9 electric buses that were delivered in December and January. And so now what we're doing is we're training our technicians, training our operators, installing permanent charging equipment in our transit garage at 1900 Kentucky Street. And they'll be able to go into revenue service and serve the public in spring.
Wow. So they are here and all ready to go. To clarify, these are not hybrids.
No. So these are all electric. The only diesel component to this bus is auxiliary heat. And so instead of burning 150 gallons a day on a single bus, we'll probably be burning about 8 on the coldest day.
Wow.
Which we've experienced as of late. So the reason that we have this auxiliary heat is because of the battery life. And so we want to make sure that the batteries are as long-ranging as possible. And so this is the way to offset that because heat obviously takes up a lot of battery power.
Hmm. Do these buses, as far as you know, function exactly the same as a normal diesel bus in terms of their speed and what can they sort of sound like and feel like?
It's a better experience. Hmm. So a couple of things that you're going to notice right away as a rider is that there's a rear window. And so instead of this diesel engine letting out exhaust right behind you if you're a passenger sitting at the back of the bus, you're going to be able to look out the window and see the rest of the route. And so that's one thing. The next is how smooth the ride is. And it is just an incredible new fifth generation Proterra electric bus that from a user perspective is going to feel great. And it obviously you don't have the sound of an engine and there's not smoke blowing at you once you, get off the bus and walk to where you need to go.
Wow. Is the hope or is the intention to see how this goes and then potentially expand upon this initial electrification effort? I mean, do you see this expanding?
Absolutely. There is a commitment by the Mayor Corey Mason and the Common Council to do what's in the best interest of the environment and to modernize our transportation fleet to provide better service to our residents. And so 25% of your entire fleet is not a pilot program. And we kind of laugh about that we jumped into the deep end of the pool on this one. And so we're really excited about how this goes and being able to continue this type of effort.
Wonderful. You were saying before we went on the air that one of the things that's maybe in a sense most impressive about this is that the transportation sector tends to be a risk-averse sector. It tends to be a sector where nobody is excited about stepping out on a limb and taking some risks. And I suppose in some respects, this might look like stepping out on a limb and taking a risk. So how did it happen?
Certainly. Yeah, I think that you're exactly right. When you work in transit, your job is to make sure that the buses are running and to make sure that service is predictable and to make sure that there are as few barriers as possible to meet the needs of your ridership. And in many cases, that results in people wanting to do what they know. This is a noble group that wants to make sure that they're providing an essential public service. But at the same time, this new technology is out there and it's working across the country and it's working across the world. And so especially now, as there is infrastructure dollars coming in from the federal government, now is the time that you're going to see fleets all across the country electrify.
Are there more mundane matters that are also a challenge in terms of where the buses should run and what their routes exactly should be and finding drivers and that kind of thing? I suppose that that's also a part of what you do, not just something as exciting as getting the fleet electrified.
Well, exactly. We provide routes that bring residents to places of care, bring residents to places of employment, education. And so our job is to make sure that we're continually looking at how our service is being effective in that way. So we work closely with our municipal partners. We had a transit commission meeting last night, actually, where the Department of Workforce Development presented on some of the needs that they've heard from employers across Eastern Racine County to get workers to jobs. And so we're excited to, build on our positive relationship that we have with the Village of Mount Pleasant to expand service and make sure that folks can get to those jobs. And that's a great part of this work. And it brings us back to the point of transportation, which isn't, that you've got these buses and they're really cool, but it's the ride. This is a way people get to work. This is a way people get to the hospital. This is a way people get to school. And pre-pandemic, we had over 1 million rides a year. And so we're recovering from that, and we're working to modernize our system through launching an app where folks can see in real time where their bus is going to be and have that information and data on their phone to be able to take the bus. And that's going to help us build back our ridership. But there are so many people in this community who rely on public transportation. And as we do this work, there are going to be people who choose public transportation over the personal automobile. I know that if I didn't have to pay for insurance, if I didn't have to pay for gas, if I didn't have to, worry about, a fender bender, that I would be on the bus all the time because it would be the economical decision.
Right. I remember when I lived in Chicago, I actually loved riding the trains and riding the buses because I could get other stuff done. It just let somebody else do the driving, as the phrase goes. And there's a lot to be said for that, and particularly when it's a nice, smooth, lovely ride, as is promised with these new electric vehicles. Do you know when exactly in the spring these buses are going to be on the streets?
March, April. So there will be an announcement, and we're going to be making a big splash, so you'll hear about it.
Excellent. Very good. We're talking with Trevor Young, who is the transit manager for the city of Racine. Of course, issues of transportation tend to sort of expand beyond city limits, and thinking regionally, of course, makes all kinds of sense. So what do you see as kind of the primary points of discussion right now in terms of transportation issues in southeastern Wisconsin, and what part do you hope to play in those ongoing discussions?
Bringing workers to jobs and bringing residents into the city of Racine is the priority. And so that those guiding goals really inform the work that we're going to be doing around transportation. So what are the things that are going to attract residents to the city of Racine? And what are things that are going to be able to provide current residents an opportunity to be able to get to work and provide for themselves and their families? And so that is the mission. So as you see now, we've got millions, really billions of dollars that are invested in transportation-related infrastructure from the federal government. Hmm. And from now until those monies come into the city of Racine, that is the priority of the newly minted transit department for the city of Racine. And what does that infrastructure look like? This conversation has been going on for a long time. When we were off the air, Greg, we talked about KRM and the efforts that were involved in commuter rail. And I think we're at a unique time now where you're seeing that type of investment. And there may be opportunities to bring resources from Washington back home to make sure that we have that. As we said earlier in the program, Racine is the largest community furthest away from an interstate highway system in the Midwest. So we are at a competitive disadvantage, even though we're in the heart of the third largest economic region in the United States. So there's one word, connection, that needs to occur in order for Racine to have a bright future. And how can you do that? The rails already exist. The economic benefits have already been tested and are showing that this is a worthwhile investment. And so the coalition around the business community, around the faith community, the nonprofit community, residents have worked on this issue before because they know how impactful commuter rail would be in the city of Racine. This would spur private investment in transit-oriented development, where you'll have folks who will be able to live, work, and play in Racine and be able to be in downtown Chicago and downtown Milwaukee without a personal vehicle. And we have seen this effort occur before, but never have we seen this effort be framed by billions of dollars being dedicated to this type of infrastructure development from the federal government, thanks to the infrastructure bill passing. And I know that the priority of the Department of Transportation at a federal level is equity, growth, and sustainability. And there is not one project in the nation that speaks to that more than providing this type of access to opportunity than KRM in the city of Racine. Here you have a community that is diverse. You know, the Lincoln King neighborhood is one of the most diverse census tracts in the state of Wisconsin, but it's also one of the more struggling neighborhoods in our community. So to say that you can put in that type of infrastructure investment, that will make a dramatic difference for folks in that neighborhood and will create a higher quality of life for people that they deserve, because this is something that is worthwhile.
Mm. If this were to come to pass in the way that you think would have the greatest impact, what would this look like? Where would this service be exactly offered? And what would sort of the web of service look like in your mind's eye?
Well, this effort of expanding commuter rail goes before my time. And so there are people who have been able to articulate this vision from the corporate community, whether it be the role that SC Johnson played in advocating for this type of infrastructure, because they knew that this would attract skilled workers to their, their office buildings. This goes back to you know, the faith community saying that, you know, folks need this type of access to jobs and opportunity. And, you know, this goes to the development community that say we want to spend our money in a connected community and build up Racine. And we know that if this infrastructure project happens, where we're going to spend it and where we're going to build. And so what it looks like in a tangible manner, hopefully we see something like a extension of Metra going up to Milwaukee with downtown Racine as a stop. But there are many different iterations that could exist with a project like this. And we're at the very early stages of thinking about how you advocate for a project in this way. We're going to learn from the past and efforts previous and hopefully come to fruition on something like this.
I remember when some of the first really serious conversations about this first emerged, and it's probably around the time you were still in your orphanage back in Russia. I mean, this has been knocked around for a long time. But one of the things that was so striking was that you had, for instance, business leaders and environmentalists sitting around the same table in perfect accord or nearly perfect accord around this issue. And at a time when there weren't a whole lot of issues around which those two constituencies would agree. But it's like this made so much sense for people who owned factories and for people who care about the environment. And of course, once in a while you have people who are both, but otherwise you had this group of people here and this group of people here who are all working really, really hard on this issue. I should think that's one of the most exciting things about this is the sort of the array of interested parties who are behind this.
This is a bridge builder, not to reference a different form of infrastructure, but this brings people together from all different backgrounds. The article that was just recently posted in Fast Company magazine, which is a magazine nationally dedicated to entrepreneurship and new technologies and kind of the tech sector, talked about four rail corridors in the United States of America that deserve a revival. And they mentioned the Kenosha-Racine-Milwaukee line.
Wow.
And this was, to your point, Greg, not an environmentalist magazine, not something that would be considered more of the left. This was a magazine dedicated to informing the business community around what's new and trending. And and so this is something that brings folks together because it really is common sense. And I think that we need more common sense in government.
Hmm. So do you see a successful path forward? And where do you think we are in terms of a path forward? Are we right at the outset? Or?
No, I don't want to, wear rose-colored glasses here. This is a steep hill to climb, but if we didn't try and we didn't look at this moment in time where these resources are going to be flooding in from Washington with this paradigm that exists around equity, economic growth, and sustainability, we wouldn't be doing our jobs. And so we are right at the onset of this effort, and there's going to be a lot of work to do yet to build that coalition. But I know that there are national organizations that have reached out to the city of Racine, such as the National High Speed Rail Alliance, looking to be involved in this effort.
By the way, I noticed that, I don't know if currently, but I know at least in the past, you've been a member of the board of a couple of different organizations, including one called All Aboard Wisconsin. Tell us what their mission is.
That's right. All Aboard Wisconsin is a statewide organization that advocates for commuter rail across the state. And they were successful in their efforts around advocating for additional cars on Amtrak and expanded service on the Hiawatha Line, which is yet another example of the need for this type of service because the Hiawatha Line is the busiest line outside of New England in the United States of America in terms of Amtrak service. So there is clearly a demand for commuter rail infrastructure in southeastern Wisconsin. But that was a success of theirs. And they work closely with Minnesota's All Aboard Minnesota in expanding Amtrak service that connects the Twin Cities to the state of Wisconsin as well. And so I've been on that board a couple years now, and working in transit advocacy in Wisconsin is not for the faint of heart. So when there are victories, we like to celebrate them.
Right. Well, that's very, very well put. What about this group called 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin?
1,000 Friends of Wisconsin is an excellent organization that advocates for sustainable land use, mass transit, equity issues regarding environmental concerns, because these two issues are so related. We can't talk about equity and the environment in silos, because there are communities that are disproportionately impacted by climate change that would benefit from more sustainable infrastructure. And so 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin works to make sure that we have pedestrian infrastructure and bike and ped infrastructure. And they are a wonderful organization based out of Madison that works across the state advocating for that type of sustainable future.
Excellent. When we speak regionally, I think we immediately leap to Milwaukee and maybe Madison and points west and so on. What about Racine's neighbor to the immediate south? What kind of cooperation does there need to be between the city of Racine and the city of Kenosha, especially when it comes to some of these issues?
I always say Racine and Kenosha are the twin cities of Wisconsin. Mm. You know, here you have these two, you know, communities that are, you know, rebuilding from economic changes and have such strong identities and have amazing histories that people here in this community are proud of. And they have similar challenges. And so I see cooperation between Racine and Kenosha as essential. And I know that institutions like Gateway are going to be a part of building that strong relationship as they have a footprint in both communities. And Carthage and Parkside also, you know, understanding that Racine and Kenosha are their communities too. I think that higher ed in many respects will lead the way in building that strong relationship.
I like the sound of that. Last question. As transit manager, is this something you're sort of appointed for life, or do you serve at the pleasure of whoever is mayor at the time? I mean, conceivably, how long could you hold this specific position in Racine?
Yeah, this is a career. This is a civil servant role. And unlike what happens in Washington or Madison, folks who work in local government aren't political in nature. If you're heading a department, it's not tied to, you know, one administration or the next. It's tied to the institution of City Hall. And I am honored to have this role, and there's so much work to do.
Hmm. Well, it's been great to see already all of the work that you have undertaken in this new position, and it's certainly something we're going to continue to follow with great, great interest, and we look forward to having you back from time to time to give us updates on all of the exciting things going on around some of these really, really significant issues. Trevor Young, transit manager for the city of Racine, I really appreciate you making time in your very busy schedule to be part of the morning show today. It was great to talk with you.
It was a pleasure being on, Greg. Thank you.
Trevor Young, transit manager for the city of Racine. We have a full slate of morning shows coming up next week that promise a lot of really interesting things, including Monday, a conversation with a young poet by the name of Jacob Hunt. On Tuesday, the author of a book called Impact, which takes a look at the way in which our planet and life has been shaped by meteorites. We're also going to be previewing next week an upcoming American Experience documentary, which is called Riveted, The History of Genes. That's J-E-A-N-S, The History of Genes. Next week, we're also going to be celebrating the 10th anniversary of the RITA. And that, of course, is that very impressive arts and humanities facility at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. It scarcely seems possible that 10 years ago, the RITA was dedicated and open for business. And we'll be looking back over these exciting 10 years and also looking ahead to some of the ways in which UW-Parkside is planning on celebrating those 10 years. And a week from today, I'm going to be speaking with Justin Spitzman, who is the author of a really entertaining and interesting new book called Coach, The Greatest Teachers in Sports and Their Lessons for Us All. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org, and available as a podcast 7 days a week. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. From our arts and community calendar, the Metropolitan Opera has its next HD simulcast in movie theaters all across the country, including Tinseltown in Kenosha and Renaissance in Racine.